And we welcome you back to what will be another hour of Get Up here on ESPN. I'm Mike Greenberg in Bristol, and it was a remarkable night on Last Dance last night. I tried to tell you, of all the episodes, 7 and 8 had the most emotion, and we're going to get into that with Jalen Rose and Stephen A. Smith, who will be live with us in just a moment. It is time to get up. And we're getting up this morning with the Cowboys as well. They just won't stop talking about why they won't sign their quarterback. You'll hear the very latest and what it means. And a powerful voice lays down the law on the college level. Are we headed toward utter chaos in college football? We've got a roundtable. And Shaq says these guys should just shut it down. Don't bother coming back. Wow, do I disagree with that. And I'll tell you why. In this hour, it's time to get up, starting right now with last night's episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance. And a reminder, you can watch all 8 episodes on the ESPN app. I'd like to run a clip of one of the most powerful moments to me of the entire series. This was Michael Jordan talking about his teammates and his drive to win.
I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
Remarkable. I mean, Jalen Rose, I spent 6 years covering that guy every single day and 25 years since trying to explain what made him so great. And in those 10 seconds, I think we saw it. You played against him. What did you think of those 10 seconds?
A level of dedication that you're going to do whatever it takes in order to maximize each opportunity that you're presented. You're going to have a lot of people talk about leadership, Greeny, and I want to do a distinction. When you're a guy like Magic Johnson, who's one of the greatest players and leaders of all time, you also get a chance to play with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But you know who their coach is? Pat Riley. And you know what the Lakers organization has been able to do? Win championships before all of their great players and after all of their great players. When you're Michael Jordan, you go into a situation where not only you're the best player in the league and haven't won championships yet, people don't believe that Phil is even a great coach. Tim Duncan, when he went to the Spurs, him and Pop came together and they won those championships together. And we started to appreciate Pop for being a great coach. It's a lot different when you go into a scenario, a franchise that had never won before you, a coach that hadn't won before you. So now you become a dual voice in the locker room. A lot of times great players get a chance to lean on their great coach to be the bad guy with their teammates. When you're Michael Jordan, you had to play both roles. And it was emotionally and physically draining, as you saw in that interview.
Yeah, it was incredible to see just how much it meant to him. And even all these years later, the way it still affects him. Stephen A. Smith is with us this morning as well. Steve, of the 8 hours of TV that we've seen so far talking about Michael Jordan, I thought those 10 seconds, at least for me, were the most insightful and the most insight maybe we've ever been given into what really drove Michael. What did you think of it?
Well, I definitely agree with you there, and I agree with Jalen and what he was saying about the mentality and the challenges of having to do it on both ends, having to be an extension of the coach, having to be that leader, having to be the star that, you know, is called upon to close the deal when it's time and to hold everybody accountable. And what I peeled from it more importantly than anything else was the words that he used in expressing about what he had to endure. If you are a teammate that came to the fold after he had accomplished those things, after he had endured what he had endured to get to that point, he didn't feel the need to capitulate to you. He knew what it was going to take to be a champion, and he was demanding that you capitulate to his wishes, that you follow his lead. And more importantly, what did he say? There's not a single person that can ever say to you that Michael Jordan asked them to do something he didn't nor was unwilling to do himself. Everything that he asked of everybody else, he did. And he demanded the same from you. And it was fed off of the fact that he had to endure what he had to endure in order to get to that point. So he didn't want to hear somebody that came along later that didn't have to endure those wars trying to tell him there's a different way to go about doing it. He didn't want to hear it. And to be quite honest with you, I think any champion worth his salt couldn't blame him for feeling that way. When you go through certain things to get to the mountaintop, per se, and people that came after you never endured that, but you're still the best and you're the leader. It's not about capitulating to them. It's about getting them to abide by your wishes.
And it's a relentlessness, Jalen, as well, because there are many who have done that for a concentrated period of time, put literally every ounce of energy in their soul into something in sports and other places. But it seems that once he figured out how to win, that never went away even for a moment. And that has to be, I think it really does inform to some degree, Jalen, why he kept stepping away, why it was too much to keep doing for a long period of time.
It was psychologically and emotionally draining. Just think about it. At the height of your profession, you just won 3 straight championships and you lost your dad. You walk away from the game. You had done something that Magic, Bird, and Isaiah didn't do. That's win 3 in a row. At that time, Greeny, he was already considered the GOAT. He was already considered the greatest player of all time. Mm-hmm. He goes play baseball, comes back, and wins 3 more championships. And again, I can't continue to stress this enough. There are 3 different phases of what it's going to take to hoist a trophy in any sport. It's the franchise. Have they done it before the player? It's the head coach. Is he great in his own right? And then it's the great player. So for Michael Jordan, he had to cover all 3 bases. Sometimes in high school, college, and or pro, the great player, like a Tom Brady, doesn't necessarily have to cover all 3 bases because he has a guy like Bill Belichick to be the bad guy when he doesn't have to be.
Now, let's move on to some other things that we saw last night. Stephen A., when I got up this morning, the highest trending thing that was connected to Last Dance was the name Gary Payton. And for those of you who didn't see it, this is the reason why. Because they interview Gary Payton talking about the 96 finals in which he says he, the glove, a Hall of Fame guard who is considered one of the great defensive guards that ever lived, saying he felt if he had gotten more physical with Michael earlier in those finals, maybe it would have changed the outcome. And Stephen A., Michael essentially laughs in his face, or at least laughs at the vision of his face in an iPad. What did you think of that?
Well, it didn't bother me because Michael Jordan would laugh at anybody or any notion of any one individual believing that they can guard him one-on-one. And it wasn't about Gary Payton. It's about all the pundits, the commentators, and whoever else opened their mouth to believe that the glove, as exceptional as he was as a defensive player, could guard Michael Jordan one-on-one. He averaged 27 or 42% shooting in that series, which were both lows for him in the NBA Finals. So we have to give Gary Payton the same level of respect to some degree we once gave Joe Dumars. Did you stop Michael Jordan? No. But that didn't mean you were not tougher than other people in trying to sort of limit him to some degree as best as you possibly could. That's about the best you could say about anybody that went against Michael Jordan, because as he once said when asked the question, who could stop him, he said Dean Smith. That's the only person he ever encountered who could stop him, because that was his college coach and nobody else could. So I think it's important to recognize that, but I also think it's important, and I think Jalen will appreciate this, is this thing. When this docuseries is over, if you look at everything that Michael Jordan is and everything that he has put on display, it comes back to the Detroit Pistons, the Bad Boys. Because when he talks about what shaped and what framed his personality, he talks about 2 things. His brother Larry growing up and how tough of a competitor that guy was and how he helped to make him what he was, along with his father, of course. But then he talked about the wars that he went through. Everybody knows when Michael Jordan is talking about wars, he's talking about the Detroit Pistons. That's what helped make him what he is today. At some point in time, even though we talked about it in the past over the last several weeks with Isaiah Thomas, Bill Laimbeer, Rodman, Sally, and others, the bottom line is we're going to have to get back to that, because that ultimately had a lot to do with what Michael Jordan ultimately became as that competitor, that teammate. He was always great, but there are certain things that propel you to another level, and the Bad Boy Pistons certainly did that for
him. I agree. That shaped him. And to the previous thing you were saying there about slowing him down, I mean, the legendary Dan Patrick line from the SportsCenter of that era, you can't stop Michael Jordan, you only hope to contain him. But, Jalen, would you imagine Gary Payton, when he saw that last night, is he offended? Like, if you're Gary Payton, are you mad this morning?
Gary doesn't care at all. And as somebody that's been on the floor, both of those guys, Gary Payton has the number one potty mouth in the history of NBA basketball. He was saying things on the floor, Greeny. I thought we was in the alley in Detroit playing rec ball. Like, I was like, oh, okay. And so for Gary, an all-time great player, a Hall of Famer, and by the way, his calling card was defense.
Yeah.
So if there was somebody that was going to slow down Jordan for any period of time, it would be a guy like Gary Payton. But you don't make it to that level without having some level of irrational confidence. Yeah. But if you're Gary Payton, it kind of seems like a reality because this is what you do to get yourself to be an all-time
Stephen
great.
Stephen A., but Michael's laughing at him on national Greeny, TV. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's just basketball talk. Everybody knows MJ is the GOAT and everybody's second. But let me tell you something
Gary
right now.
Care.
There isn't a player alive who's ever played basketball that would not want Gary Payton as their teammate. That brother had a heart. He had a heart just as big as Michael Jordan. He didn't have Michael Jordan's skill, but Gary Payton was second to no one when it came to what's inside your chest. He wasn't scared of a damn soul, and he was a Hall of Famer and a Hall of Fame defender as well. Jalen knows that.
All right, guys, stay with me here because you're both coming back.
Up.
I'm going to bring Stephen A. back on the Cowboys, and I'm going to bring Jalen back a little bit later on some comments from Shaquille O'Neal. This is what we have coming in this hour. Stephen Jones in Dallas talking about why the Cowboys haven't locked up Dak long-term. We'll tell you why he may be playing with fire, and Stephen A. will weigh in. And then last night on Last Dance, we learned why Michael Jordan acted the way he did. Did the ends justify the means? Jalen and Richard Jefferson with more on that as we continue. Get up on ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We're back on Get Up, and something else from this weekend that needs to be looked into a little bit more here. As by now you're obviously aware, Dak Prescott has until July 15th to sign his exclusive franchise tender with the Cowboys, where the executive VP Stephen Jones told Pro Football Talk that they're focused on getting a long-term deal, but he said, quote, there's all sorts of analytics out there that show if your quarterback takes up too big a percentage of your salary cap, that it decreases your chances to win. So he's saying that at the same time that Joe Theismann, who is a great former quarterback in Washington, is saying, quote, this was on CBS Sports Radio, if I was advising Dak Prescott, I would say take the money. What are you looking for, another couple million? You're never going to see the last year of this contract anyway. You're not a top five quarterback in the National Football League. You're a good football player. You have the potential to be better. But what have you done? So you got all of that out there right now, and there's still no deal on the table. So I'm bringing Stephen A. back in here because we all know that whenever we're talking about the Dallas Cowboys, there's no one from whom you want to hear more. And Marcus joins us as well, the former Cowboys. Stephen A., between Stephen Jones and Joe Theismann, what'd you make of all that?
Well, first of all, I get where Joe Theismann is coming from, and I saw Swagoo a little bit earlier on in the show, and I 100% concur with his opinion. If Dak Prescott is getting paid or is getting guaranteed $35 million a year and over $100 million in guarantees, you got to take that deal, particularly in these moments in time. So I don't disagree with Joe Theismann at all. But what I think it does highlight is the fact that Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones, there's something wrong with the money that has been offered to Dak Prescott. We've accused Dak Prescott of many things in recent memory. We talked about him, rather. We have not called him a dummy. We've never called him that. We've never called him or accused him of being someone that lacks intelligence. And so when Stephen Jones speaks the way that he speaks, acting like he's straight out of analytics school or whatever the case may be, talking about how a quarterback taking up a chunk of the salary cap can't win. Well, Stephen Jones, could you please tell me what has won for you? Because I don't recall the Dallas Cowboys winning in the last quarter century. I don't recall that being a reality of yours. So if that's the mentality that you have, excuse me, did you exercise that in the past?
Probably yes. How's that worked for you? Hasn't worked for you, not if a Super Bowl championship is what your aspiration entails. So I don't want to hear that nonsense. This has me on high alert. It's really raised my proverbial eyebrow when it comes to my I don't understand with the exceptional NFL analysts we have all over the place, or the NFL insiders rather, why someone has not been able to tell us the amount of guaranteed dollars that Dak Prescott has been offered. Because I got to believe that's what this is about. Nothing else makes any sense for this to be going on for a year now the way that it has. The quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott has been signed, DeMarcus Lawrence has been signed, Jalen Smith has been signed. You brought in new cornerbacks, you're drafting a CeeDee Lamb as your wide receiver, even though that doesn't have anything to do with your cap situation right now. I'm just saying, it makes no sense with the multitude of people that Stephen and Jerry Jones have taken care of that you haven't taken care of Dak Prescott yet. I want to know what the guaranteed dollars are, because clearly that is what this is about. And no one has been able to tell me how much Dak Prescott has been guaranteed. No one's been able to tell us that. I can't believe it.
Marcus, I think he makes a good point. You help us. You played there. You've been around there like crazy. You know the way things work. You just heard him run through the list of players they've taken care of. Jerry Jones loves stars. Dak Prescott is a star. Why hasn't he just taken care of this?
Gee, oh my goodness, bro. The only thing that I can come up with is that they don't think Dak Prescott is worth top-tier quarterback money. That's the only thing I can come up with, because I've heard the same thing Stephen A. has heard. I've talked to people around here. Like, there is no – listen, I'm not going to say there is no way, but there is a deep-seated something in me that's telling me that there is no way they could have offered Dak that amount of money and he said no. I'm thinking of football in the history and the totality, and watching guys get life-changing contracts, life-changing money, being able to take care of their families for generations. And you telling me Dak Prescott gonna turn that down because he wants 4 years instead of 5 years? Nobody, I've been sold some bad stuff in my life, but you ain't selling me that one. And those ones that got sold to me in a bad way caught me off guard. But the fact that we keep hearing it's the number of years, it ain't the money. Gee, it's always been the damn money when I've watched contract negotiations. The number of years are formalities for all intents and purposes. When you tell me that if the Dallas Cowboys came out, or Stephen Jones or Jerry Jones came out and said, hey, we have offered Dak $35 million a year and $100 million guaranteed, the conversation will shift to Dak being crazy for not taking that amount of money.
Go ahead, Steve.
That's it.
Listen, here's the deal, Greeny. And listen, I respect all our colleagues, not just at this network, but in the industry and all of this other stuff. I was a beat writer for 17 years, for over 15 years, rather, and I've been a journalist for over 25 years. I have never seen a situation where it's taken this damn long to find out what kind of guaranteed dollars somebody has been offered. Jared Goff was offered signed for $110 million. Carson Wentz, what was it, 107, 109, I don't remember. But guaranteed, it has been a year, and nobody knows what the guaranteed dollars for Dak Prescott is. Because that'll take the suspense right out of it. And my Lion Swagoo, that will take the suspense right out of it. If we find out what amount of guaranteed dollars Dak Prescott has been offered, Greeny, the suspense is gone. We'll be able to definitively say it. So to me, whether it's Dak Prescott, Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones, somebody being handled with kid gloves. Because I don't understand how I'm sitting here today in May of 2020. This stuff been going on before the summer of 2019. And I still, how many guaranteed dollars Dak Prescott has been offered? It don't make no damn sense, Greeny. It don't make no damn sense. I'm still waiting. Somebody need to tell me what the guaranteed number is. Jimmy Garoppolo got $72.5 million guaranteed. Okay, we know what Matt Ryan got guaranteed. We know what Matt Stafford got guaranteed. We know what Aaron Rodgers got guaranteed. We know what Tom Brady got guaranteed. What the hell is Dak Prescott being guaranteed? That's what I want to know. What's the number? Somebody tell me. Somebody. It is I don't give a damn who it is. Somebody tell me.
It is a Monday morning, and his show hasn't even started yet. But Stephen A. is in midweek form. Steve, we will see you in about 40 minutes for First Take, which follows us. Outstanding. First Take live here today on ESPN starting 10 Eastern. That's followed by SportsCenter at noon. Then we have NFL Live, The Jump, First Take Extra. Jalen and Jacoby, highly questionable around the horn. We have this new block coming up in the afternoon with all the shows that you like. Then a two-hour SportsCenter coming up at 5. PTI guys will join them at 5:30 and cap the day with SportsCenter with SVP. We have a full day coming your way on ESPN. Coming up, no students, no games. That's the position of the head of the NCAA. But can he really make that decision? We have a roundtable next. Get up, ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Back on Get Up, and episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance debuted last night on ESPN. I'll remind you, you can watch all 8 episodes if you'd like on the ESPN app. And then afterwards, Scott Van Pelt had Michael Wilbon on, and Michael was talking about Jordan's competitiveness and drive to win.
That is the essence of Michael Jordan, the basketball player. Michael Jordan, the competitor. Forget just basketball. We see this in every part of his life, the competitor. And it's also a big part of why he did this documentary finally. People say, well, why now? Well, because we got to a point, and Jason Hare found this out, the director, when he asked him, he said, this is your chance to explain this. All of this, Michael sitting there on camera, this is his way of explaining. Here's why I did what I did. This is the method to it. I wasn't just some guy out there trying to be a bad man. I thought that this was the way we needed to do it. I proved it over time, and this was the formula. We were going to do it this way or get out.
We will have more on this and coming up in a couple of minutes. Jalen Rose and Richard Jefferson will join me in 10 minutes with their thoughts on The Last Dance and a whole lot more. Meanwhile, I thought this was very interesting over the weekend. While there are no official decisions on the status of the 2020 college football season, in an interview on the NCAA's official Twitter account Friday night, the president of the NCAA, Mark Emmert, said he couldn't see a college football season in the fall if students aren't back on campus.
Yeah, first of all of the in Division I for sure, all of the commissioners and every president that I've talked to is in clear agreement. If you don't have students on campus, you don't have don't have student athletes on campus. That doesn't mean it has to be up and running in the full normal model, but you've got to treat the health and well-being of the athletes at least as much as the regular students. And so if a school doesn't reopen, then they're not going to be playing sports. I mean, it's really that simple.
Okay, so those were his comments, and we put together a terrific roundtable. Swagoo is back. Laura is here. Paul Feinbaum is here. And Laura, I'm going to start with you with a question I can't believe I'm asking. He's the president of the NCAA, but does it really matter what Mark Emmert thinks when it comes to all of this?
Well, look, Greeny, I think it probably doesn't matter as much as Mark Emmert would like to think that it matters in all of this. And everyone's going to keep talking about this, and yet there's still not a lot of answers. There's still time on their side. There's still so much to be figured out. So he came out with a strong stance on this, but I don't know that any of these schools individually are going to look at it the way that he necessarily wants them to, at least across the board. It's interesting because when it comes to schools reopening and there being students back on campus, There's an interesting loophole that I've heard floating around recently that's, hey, look, we could technically reopen, but everyone's almost doing distance learning online. That's something that happens anyway. In fact, Joe Burrow, national champion from LSU last year, took all of his classes online. It is possible. It's something that a lot of people are throwing around right now, saying, well, look, we're technically going to be reopened, but we would only really have our football players and other athletes back on campus for fall sports. That's going to be unique. In all of this, the money continues to come out as the most important thing. And in fact, Alabama's athletic director that we talked to last week, Greg Byrne, said that they're fully planning for sports in the fall and fans in the stands and all of the above. They're planning to be opened up. And one reason why you might think that that's going to be important at one school there in Alabama, and there's other schools as well, $95 million, the profit in 2019 for Alabama football. That accounted for nearly 60% of all athletic revenue that year.
So, Paul Feinbaum, what do you make of Mark Emmert saying that this weekend?
Greeny, Mark Emmert has no more authority or influence over college football than Bozo the Clown. He is just an innocent bystander in all this, and I think that's why he put out a statement. This wasn't an interview. He put it out himself because he was listening to all the things that Laura just got through talking about. We've moved 3 weeks ago from no fans in the stand, no students on campus, no fans in the stand, no football, to a modification of that, and Emmert had to be heard, so he was, and he was not heard very loudly because the five Power Five commissioners don't give a rip.
What do you think, Marcus?
Gee, we watched this. I'm with Paul. We watched the slow disband of what the NCAA was and is as we knew it. And you look at it, not just in this facet, in multiple things. Name, image, and likeness. Didn't want that. Okay, we're going to do that anyway. Y'all make a decision whether y'all going to get on board or not. Players now, we talked about it a few weeks ago. These high school top tier athletes deciding to go to the G League. I think all of this plays into what we start to understand about what the NCAA is now. So Mark Emmert, just like the NCAA, is becoming ancient and archaic. Things are evolving, and they have no say in this, just like they have no say in a lot of things that are going to transpire for future things in college sports.
By the way, your ability to maintain concentration through that, Marcus, was not ignored by the rest of us, and it was exceptional.
Laura, let me
come back to you, because I want to be clear for those who are not hearing these conversations every single day. What Mark Emmert said directly contradicts with a lot of what you're hearing in the interviews that you're doing daily, yes?
Right. And that's why. I think people are looking for loopholes all over the place, trying to say, look, how can we figure this out? What can we do? Because at the end of the day, as Paul has said, as Marcus has said, as all of us have said, you've got to see college sports happen in the fall, and college football specifically, in order for the rest of these universities to continue to have viability. I mean, you even look at it in 2019, this year that I'm referencing specifically for just Alabama. We're talking about the football program making a $25 million profit and every other sport taking a $22 million loss. I mean, these are numbers that are out there where I think that these schools are looking at their futures and their programs, and they're saying, wait a second, we've got to do what's best for us. And to the point of these, what everybody's saying here about the NCAA, I do believe that there has been a groundswell amongst Power Five commissioners at the very least to say, how can we break off and do something? And this is just, you know, what you hear out there. And now, as ridiculous as it may sound, this could be the catalyst for that, to where they finally say, well, let's just go and do our own thing because we have the opportunity to do it now.
You know, when I'm listening to what Emmert is saying there, what I think, if you read between the lines, is I think he recognizes that if they don't open up college campuses to anyone but the student athletes, then that forever changes the idea that they're students first and athletes second. And that, I think, creates a host of other problems that the NCAA doesn't want to deal with. Does that make sense to you, Paul?
Yes, it does. And Greeny, whether Emmert has any influence or not, he has a point here. And I think he felt like he had to make it because this shift, this paradigm shift from the college football commissioners and the athletic directors is dramatic. I think they realized a couple of weeks ago that they cannot get every campus open, and they certainly can't get campuses open like we expect and we normally see them. So the university athletic directors and presidents are looking to check a box. blocks. Get somebody on campus so we can get away with having college football. And I think what they're trying to do are to get college football players on campus and maybe a few more people. Maybe take some classes in classrooms, but probably take classes on campus remotely, as crazy as that sounds, so they can get away with putting college football in stadiums as opposed to losing all this money that Laura has been talking about.
And so, Marcus, just quickly, as the player in this group, generally speaking, if they were to try and play football games without a lot of students on campus or without anybody in the stands, are you good with it?
I'm fine with it. Football players competitively play a lot of games. I mean, we scrimmage. We scrimmage with no fans in the stands. We do that. They would understand the situation. Gee, am I saying it would be ideal and different? No, that wouldn't be ideal. And it wouldn't be the same. You got momentum swings with fans. Fans are a big part of what we see atmospheric from college football. But with that being said, the games can be played. The games can go on. You can win, lose, play in the stadium, keep time, have referees, and all of that if all of those things transpire. And I'm going to tell you like my grandmother used to tell me, hear me and hear me good, all right? This whole idea that the athletes are the same as students on college campuses needs to cease and desist. They are not. Never have been. When I played football, I did a tremendous amount of things that concerned football more so than school. That's how it's always been. Now everybody just has to admit it and make sure that everyone knows, because that's what's going to eventually happen.
Laura, I've got 10 seconds. Give me a date here. If we're going to see college football start when it normally does, give me a date by which this has to start moving.
I would say the end of this month, and definitely by like June 10th. And that's the date that everybody's looking towards. So I do think that they will have some sort of decision by then.
All right. Well done. Guys, great to see you all. Thank you very much. And we'll do much more of this as the week continues. But meanwhile, we also have this morning. Motorsports Update here is brought to you by Mother's Polish. And you saw it on ESPN, the world of Formula One. They ran the Spanish Grand Prix virtually yesterday. It was a race that featured six F1 drivers, three European soccer stars, and golfer Ian Poulter. It was George Russell who would ultimately outlast Charles Leclerc for the victory after Leclerc was issued a 3-second penalty on the second to last lap of the race. All right, coming up here, last night on The Last Dance, Michael Jordan emotionally revealed why he was so hard on his teammates. Jalen Rose tells you why it all comes with a cost. Next, Get Up, ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Last night, episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance debuted on ESPN, and I'll remind you, you can watch all 8 episodes on the ESPN app. And one of the most interesting topics that came from the episode, the 96 finals, Jordan leading the Bulls to their fourth championship over the Sonics. There were a lot of great moments in it last night, and Jalen Rose is with me here, and RJ will join us in a few minutes. That's Richard Jefferson. But when we look at what we saw from Michael Jordan last night and the extraordinary moments in which he described his burning competitiveness and the way that maybe sometimes he wasn't easy on his teammates, but he never demanded anything of anyone he wasn't willing to do himself. Is that a mentality that we still see, do you think, Jalen, amongst players in the NBA today?
I think that mentality still exists, the thirst for being as great as you can possibly be, making the necessary sacrifices, having a level of discipline. Like I've said, today's current athlete, they have more skill than any history, any era of basketball. I always like to compare athletes prior to 2000, in theory, they worked out. These athletes train. It's 24/7, 365 in order to be amongst the all-time greats. And we see some people pushing that envelope. But how did Michael Jordan get here, Greeny? Just think about something. The teams that he went against in the 80s, the Lakers had more talent and they had Hall of Fame coaching. The Celtics had more talent, in particular, multiple Hall of Famers. The Pistons had more talent and they were a lot tougher. So he knew in order for his team to get to that position, they would have to embody both. And this wasn't about their life skills, because every time you see MJ, he got a cigar. He enjoyed the nightlife. He went to the casino. He was a maniacal gambler. He was competitive at everything he did. But when we stepped on that floor, that's when I'm going to challenge you, because this organization has never won a championship. Our head coach has never won a championship. So now he has to be the leader on each of those levels. It's almost like when you pick a college, when I go to Alabama, who's the leader of their program? Nick Saban. So if I'm their best player, I could be Tua. I could still be a great quarterback. But at some point, I could relinquish that leadership over to him and not make the other guys always mad at me when I'm trying to get them up to my level. And that's so many reasons. That's one of the reasons why a lot of great players have not been great coaches.
It's an interesting way of looking at it. Of course, you played for one of the greatest in Larry Bird. Here's one of our guys. Richard Jefferson gets up with us early this morning. RJ, thank you for doing this. There's something else I want to get to with you guys here. But quickly, what were your biggest takeaways from Last Dance last night and as you've watched over the course of these weeks?
Well, Jalen said everything that I really could say. My biggest thing is that when you look at MJ and when you look at how he approached the game, he approached it with one mindset. He would make up things. He would create things to get himself going. And everyone knew that. The NBA knew that. There was a fear that went from his teammates to his players. And I love it. My favorite quote is, no one's ever been coddled to greatness. And so that's what I took from that. MJ wasn't going to coddle anybody. He was going to test the coaches, the GMs, down to the 15th player. If you want to be a part of this, you have to be able to pull your weight.
I'm not one who likes, because this has all begun, to compare everything, being Michael against LeBron. But you played with LeBron James. You were one of those teammates that we're talking about. So I guess I feel like I should ask you, is there a similarity there in the way LeBron, as the best player and the leader, would lead a team? Do you see a similarity there?
I'll say this, what people don't know, and a lot of players from my generation that played against Michael Jordan at the Michael Jordan camps, that played with him in his comeback years. One thing that Michael Jordan was great at, it was camaraderie. Yes, he would take you out. He would have dinners with you. He would hang out. He would tell stories. That is a similarity that LeBron James has. Does LeBron have that same focus in practice? When it comes to preparation, yes. But the NBA had changed, so there's not, I'm going to beat you down and play against you every single day in practice and prove to you and make you get on my level. But as far as prep and mental focus, yes. As far as bringing people together and teammates and understanding that we're going to go on this journey together, so I need to be able to get on you at the most intense moments, there were similarities in that.
Yeah, it just seemed like, in some ways, different guys, but I think there is that thread of commonality. Okay, what I really wanted to ask you guys is about this. Shaquille O'Neal, over the weekend, gave these thoughts to USA Today on what they should do about this season. Quote, I think we should scrap the season. Everybody go home, get healthy, come back next year. Just scrap the season, just scrap it. To try and come back now and do a rush playoffs as a player, anytime any team that wins this year, there's an asterisk, there's not going to get the respect. Jalen Rose, what do you think?
It's definitely going to get the respect, Greeny, because fans and media understand that this is a unique circumstance. And we'll be happy to see basketball get played, especially playoff basketball, and ultimately see a champion crowned. I will have to remind the Big Diesel, there are multiple times in the history of the NBA when we talk about who's won the championship. A lot of times we don't talk about the people that got injured along the way for that team to win it. I remember when I first got into the league, when Michael Jordan left, in order to help the popularity of the game, the league thought that they was going to shorten the three-point line. And I'll never forget, like, man, short a three-point line? Is that the reason why the Rockets won their back-to-back championship? Mm. And then all of a sudden, I realized Hakeem Olajuwon is an all-time great. Ain't no asterisk there. What about the San Antonio Spurs? That was a strike-shortened season. So I don't believe that people will carry a negative connotation to any team that won a championship this year.
Yeah, the Spurs' first title in 99, they played 50 games, regular season games that season. RJ, what do you think of Shaq saying they should just scrap the year?
Well, I think it's for different reasons. I think that there's no way that we can guarantee player safety. We can't guarantee the people, coaches and referees. We can't guarantee their safety, and we can't put everyone into a bubble. So I'm looking at it from a completely different perspective. Whether we play or not, I think that asterisk conversation has been done in baseball, has been done in basketball, has been done all over. But most importantly, right now, we need to focus on making sure that everyone involved in this process is healthy, and there's no way to do it in the next 6 weeks, in the next 2 months, and guarantee again, Carl Anthony Towns' mom. You see, have players, so many players that have been affected by this, that I just don't think it's worth the risk to risk their players and the people's health and the coach's health and all of these individuals. I think that's just too difficult.
So those are hurdles that obviously the league and the players will have to try and figure out, if indeed they can't, because I don't think anyone in their right minds thinks that we should continue with the season if it's not safe for everybody to do so. That should go without saying. To go back to the piece about the asterisk, I want to bring Swagoo back in here because Marcus took a position in our first hour that I really disagree with when you said that you believe there'll be an asterisk attached to this championship because of the unique circumstances. I might argue that if you look at the totality of where we are right now, you could almost argue this will be one of the greatest championships ever won, not one of the least important. To overcome everything that it will take to overcome this, to play under the circumstances that we would assume these will be played, and for, I think, the return of the sport to have the meaning that I believe it will for the fans of the game and even beyond, based upon the way we've all been living for these last few months, I wonder if this won't feel like one of the greatest championships that we've ever seen, not one of the least important. Marcus, what do you think of that?
Gee, from an emotional standpoint and what we've been through, you're right. Like, people will relate to the fact that basketball is back and we're having a conversation about a championship series. But when you get to the nuts and bolts of competition, and when you start talking about the actual game, it won't be looked at as the same. Like, think about this. If you were to start a football season, it stops at week 8. And then you take 2 months off and the football season resumes, people are not going to look at that as the same season in football, because you deal with a lot of things that occur throughout that process, i.e. injury being one of the most important things. So there are a lot of varying factors. But to your point, the emotional side, yes, everybody will be excited. I know I want basketball back in the worst way. I love the game. But at the same time, when we're having conversations years from now, and when we look back at this particular season, and we talk about the NBA champion, deemed the NBA champion, whatever process they come back, we will not look at that the same as an 82 regular game season and everything just reoccurred and picked up where it came off. It will not be
Greeny,
the same, G. It will be an asterisk.
Go ahead, RJ.
Greeny, the one thing that I will say, and I will agree, is let's take two teams. You can take the Portland Trailblazers, who would be getting Nurkic back, who would be getting Zach Collins back. If you look at the Brooklyn Nets, there is a possibility that Kyrie could play and Kevin Durant could play. So imagine if these teams show up in the 7-8 spot. If they showed up in the 7-8 spot and started to, like, work, I'm not saying win a championship, but they could mess up the hierarchy of how things went and played. If the Nets were to upset Toronto in the first round after the great season Toronto had, that's not a normal 7 seed. Yeah. And I'm just saying that this time off actually would allow other teams to get healthy.
Jalen, final thought, go.
I don't believe Kevin Durant plays regardless this season, but I want to go back to what Marcus was talking about. I believe this would probably be one of the more celebrated championships in the history of the NBA, because it overcame all of this turbulence in order to finally get there. Marcus, this ain't 8 games into a 16-game NFL season. This is like week 13 or 14. You already knew who those teams were. We already know who the top teams are. And RJ is right. What's going to happen is the unknown. We know about the Lakers and the Clippers and the Bucks. But now all of a sudden, other teams deeper in the box score are going to be knocking some squads off that you didn't see based on the seeding as the season initially progressed.
It could become, and I have to end it here, it could become one of the most well-remembered and beloved champions of all time.
Spell appalled.
All right, I'm out of time for this, guys. Thank you. Coming up next,
Stephen A.
will start First Take. He was on Get Up earlier this morning talking about why Jordan was so tough on his teammates. You'll hear him and Max and company with much more on that as First Take follows us in 6 minutes right here on ESPN.
All right, to finish with a smile, the NFL schedule came out last Thursday, and our buddy Frank Caliendo had the reactions of some of the NFL's head coaches.
What was that? Whatever.
Let's see, what do we have here? Win. Well, we pretty much play everybody exactly the same way, so preparation doesn't matter.
You guys want me to memorize the schedule for all 32 teams? Done. I've been thinking about it a lot in the shower. I have been.
Win.
We're to lose, we booze, baby.
Are we done?
Lots of fun. Swagoo, what do you think?
Frank Kelly, first of all, it's amazing. The McVay one, the best one to me. The boy genius connotation is the best one to me. But Caliendo is a gem, man.
He's
we don't appreciate Caliendo
so
like we should.
We're out of time. See you tomorrow. First Take starts now.